week's edition of World Crisis Radio, and I am your host, Webster Tarpley, speaking from Washington, D.C. Now, the big news this week from my point of view is the unauthorized biography, and that is to say Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, is now available. The first copies shipped between September 10th and September 11th, interestingly enough, just in time for the anniversary of the 7th anniversary of September 7th. So Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, now available from Lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. You go to Lulu.com, just type in Tarpley, scroll down past a couple of other items that are there. The obviously, buy them too. Buy Obama, the postmodern coup. But Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, is now available from Lulu.com. And a broader availability will come soon. But don't wait. Everybody who hears this, you owe it to yourself to buy at least one copy, and preferably a bulk order. Think ahead to the campaigning season. We are now in the thick of it. Everything hangs in the balance. The question is now to stop the postmodern fascist coup, to fight the social fascism that has been deployed by the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberger Group, the Rand Corporation, Skull and Bones, the reactionary Chicago School, which does not appear in its own name, but through various proxies, as well as the foundation world. And the foundation world is the, I think, the most basic theme of this book, that Obama is a foundation operative. His mother worked for the Ford Foundation. Obama has worked for the Gamaliel Foundation, for the Joyce Foundation, for the Woods Fund, for the Annenberg Foundation. That was his big chance in life, and his dear friends, the terrorist weatherman, bomber, and butcher Bill Ayers, and the other weatherman, terrorist, bomber, and butcher Bernardine Dorn, work for the foundations. Ayers for the Annenberg Foundation, Bernardine Dorn for the MacArthur Foundation. So why is it that these foundations are giving grants to terrorists? What is the point of this? Well, that's the heart of the matter. That is the strategy of divide and conquer, fragmentation, splitting, playing one group in the population against another, getting the white population and the black population, the Hispanics, the Asians, and everybody else all at each other's throats. So Wall Street laughs all the way to the bank. Don't be a dupe of Wall Street. Get Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, and it's available at Lulu.com, and you'll have to put up with me today. I'm going to be reminding you of that fact, so better to go to the to Lulu today and get a copy. Of course, more than one will be needed, and I'll compare this book to some others. We have some other attempts at a biography of Obama, which are meritorious, certainly, but the primary difference here is the New Deal perspective, that we have to attack Obama from the left. We can't use this grotesque reactionary method of argumentation. You cannot get out there in this economy and be taken seriously if you say that a proposal to increase the marginal tax rates on the super rich is the equivalent of socialism or communism. That is just absurd. That is a bad joke. Yes, indeed, of course, the Bush tax cuts need to be rolled back as far as the super rich are concerned. But don't think Obama's going to do that. Remember, as we discuss already in Obama, the postmodern coup, that Jimmy Carter campaigned the entire 1976 campaign. Carter promised that he would make unemployment the number one priority once he was safely ensconced in the White House with his trilateral gang of Zbigniew Brzezinski and Paul Adolf Volcker. Carter completely reversed his field and said, oh, sorry, folks. I just talked to the Federal Reserve and my Wall Street handlers, and they've told me that really unemployment is not the problem at all. That only hits you Mickeys out there in the boondocks. It's inflation that we've got to fight. We need a national austerity program. And Carter had always had this strongly pro austerity overtone in terms of his energy policies. And God knows with Obama that is even stronger. Obama's the guy who says you will not get enough to eat, you will not have the car you want, you will not have your thermostat at the level you desire because the rest of the world won't allow it. Well, the rest of the world, of course, means City of London parasitical financiers, the same people who backed Hitler and Mussolini to the hilt back in the 1930s. They don't like that because they're green and Malthusian zero growth advocates these days. So all of this is in there. I recommend the following. Obama the Postmodern Coup is available at Amazon.com. This is a study of the Obama campaign into the spring of this year. It focuses on the campaign and the apparatus of advisors around Obama. This, of course, means people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is the guru of the entire thing, but also Mark Brzezinski. Then we get into people like Austin Goolsbee of the infamous Friedmanite right-wing Chicago School of Political Economy, somebody who believes in free trade, loves NAFTA, and told the Canadians that even when Barkey was out on the stump preaching against NAFTA. We've also got Jeffrey Liebman, who wants to take your pension away. He wants to strip you of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and leave you nothing but your eyes to cry with. And under Obama, you'll croak, but you'll croak under left cover because you'll be croaking for the sake of the polar bears, the spotted owls, the snail darters, and the ice caps. Your children will die, but the ice caps will, according to this demagogy, be intact. Of course, the money will not go for the polar bears or the ice caps. It will go into the pockets of Rockefeller, Soros, Goldman Sachs. And look at this Wall Street lineup, Lehman Brothers collapsing this afternoon. It's the 12th of September, Friday, as we tape the show. And Lehman Brothers is about to blow. And lined up behind Lehman Brothers are Washington Mutual, American International Group, Union Bank of Switzerland. It is a general finance crisis of the entire system. What we would need at this point is a New Deal candidate. And, of course, we don't have one. The closest thing we had was Senator Clinton, destroyed by the Wall Street influence on Howard Dean and Donna Brazile. So now we've got a reactionary versus a neo-fascist. Well, that's still a choice. It's not the choice we wanted, but you've got to try to get the best you can out of that. So Obama the Postmodern Coup discusses essentially the policy package that Obama actually represents. It devotes a lot of attention to Brzezinski. It devotes also a lot of attention to this question of what a postmodern coup is. It has a distinguished essay in here about the color revolutions, the things that brought you Saakashvili of Georgia and the Orange Revolution of Ukraine. This is what Obama was applying during the primaries. Thank God for the U.S. political calendar that stretches it all out over a year. I don't want to go to the British calendar where you have a whole election in 30 days, because under those circumstances, you would never be able to discover who a mystery stealth candidate is, a trilateral puppet who comes out of nowhere, like Jimmy Hu of 1976 or Barkey Hu of 2007-2008, would be able to seize power before we ever knew what hit us. Thank God for the long American season. So we've got the question of the new Gladio in action, swarming adolescents, Gene Sharp, the Albert Einstein Institute, Colonel Bob Helvey of Army Intelligence, who is the left-wing face of military intelligence working along with these people, and, of course, the Carter administration, which we go through. So Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography at lulu.com, and we'll be back in a minute.
Radio.
Webster Tarpley, your host in Washington, D.C. We're looking forward to an interview at the beginning of the second hour with Phil Berg of Philadelphia, the courageous attorney who is fighting Obama in the federal courts, exposing Obama as not qualified for the presidency, not a natural-born citizen of the United States. That will be Phil Berg at the beginning of our second hour. So in the meantime, just one more time, Obama the postmodern coup, issued in early April, is the essential profile of the Obama campaign, its policies and programs, the role of Brzezinski, the role of Goolsbee, Liebman, and the rest of them, big emphasis on foreign policy, a long comparison, 40-page chapter, between the catastrophic trilateral puppet presidency of Jimmy Carter, James Earl Carter, the previous trilateral puppet president, catastrophic for the United States, leading to the absolute deindustrialization and internal economic collapse of the country, the beginning of this 30-year-long crisis, or the escalation of the 30-year-long crisis that we're in now, and this question then also of the postmodern coup. Remember, the telegenic demagogue, probably a megalomaniac, backed by intelligence agencies, but the left wing of them, fake polling, mobs of swarming adolescents, rent-a-mobs, dupa-mobs, super-rich contributors, orchestrated media hysteria, branding, slogans, colors, symbols, emblems, colored shirts, I suppose, from brown to black to green to blue to silver. They tried them all in the 1930s, not good results. That's Obama, the postmodern coup. Get that at Amazon.com. And now, the second round, and you can see, I have never been so concerned. I've never done two books on closely related subjects in one year. I frankly tell you, the Obama candidacy is the greatest threat I have ever seen in my adult lifetime. It's the greatest threat since the Cuban Missile Crisis. And there it is. It's an attempt at a seizure of power by a financier puppet president in the middle of what is obviously a very severe financial breakdown crisis. The U.S. is in absolute collapse, absolute free fall in terms of the financial system. We've had Bear Stearns blow. We've had Fannie Mae and Freddie Mae effectively blow. Lehman Brothers is about to blow. And the other Wall Street institutions, including American International Group, is just the biggest insurance company in the world. And it is in deep, deep trouble. Naturally, Bernanke stands ready to shovel money across the room at lightning speed in terms of megabytes and gigabytes and terabytes of money. But it's not enough. The world is groaning under something between 1 quadrillion and 2 quadrillion of derivatives. The way out of the crisis, of course, is to get rid of those derivatives. So in Barack H. Obama, we'll go through the contents of this a little bit later in the show as time permits. But this is now Obama as a person. This does not start with the Iowa caucus and New Hampshire primary. This goes back to Obama's grandfather, who was a servant of the British. And he was a servant in particular of Lord Delamere, that is to say, Hugh Cholmondeley, who was the equivalent of Cecil Rhodes. Remember Rhodes, Cecil Rhodes of the Rhodes Scholarships and all that, was the top British imperialist honcho of South Africa, a bigger arena to be sure. But in Kenya, you have Lord Delamere, who was the top honcho in British East Africa at the time, and you start basically with the most basic things, the Luo tribe, the ethnic group from which Obama's family is derived and to which he has proclaimed his loyalty, saying, writing in his own book, "I'm a Luo," he says on at least one occasion. So the entire trajectory of Obama's life, starting with the Luos in Kenya, starting then with Obama Sr. and Stanley N. Dunham in Hawaii, the whole mystery of his birth. Where was he born? What country is he a citizen of? The Ford Foundation, Chapter 2, Obama's roots in polygamy, the practiced by his biological father, Obama Sr., who had a total of 4 wives and something, it looks like 8 children, 9 children, actually. And then the question of the Ford Foundation. Stanley Ann Dunham, Obama's mother, a woman named Stanley, the pro-communist anthropologist, actually Rousseauvian would be more accurate, working for the Ford Foundation. Then we get Obama at Columbia University. The big mystery of these years, about which Obama will not tell anybody anything, and it's the mystery has gotten deeper now that Wayne Allen Root, a graduate of Columbia College that same year in the same department as Barkey, says nobody has ever heard of such a person there. They just don't know who he is. Was he recruited by Zbigniew Brzezinski? That is my best guess. I invite Obama, just like Phil Berg is inviting Obama, to refute this contention by coughing up a valid vault copy of a birth certificate. We now need to have the truth about his relation to Brzezinski at Columbia in 1981, 1982, 1983. Then we get into foundation-funded racism in Chicago, Jeremiah Wright and Michelle Obama, along with Otis Moss, Dwight Hopkins, and the gang at the Foundation Church of the Final Counterinsurgency there, Trinity United Church of Christ. You're going to be hearing more about them. Chapter 4, The Apprenticeship with Foundation-Funded Terrorists, Ayers and Dorn. And this goes from the Weathermen, an ample profile of the Weathermen, and the Chicago Annenberg Challenge. Chapter 5, Obama's Heart of Darkness, the new triple play, not Tinker to Evers to Chance anymore, but Al-Samari to Auchi to Rezko to Obama and graft, the Chicago sewer of graft, the cesspool of graft in which Obama and his wife have been swimming and cavorting for, lo, these many, many years. Chapter 6, grabbing a Senate seat with a little help from his trilateral friends, how Morrison, Blair, Hall, and Jack Ryan were destroyed by perfectly timed scandals and slanders coming out of the Axelrod clique at the Chicago Tribune and other corrupt media outlets. Chapter 7, The Hope Pope and His Trilateral Money Machine. How is it that Obama gets all this money? Mucho moolah for Barkey. How does it happen? Because of his pretty face? Or because he's a puppet of the trilateral Bilderberg-Rand financier cabal? Up to you. Chapter 8, Our Souls Are Broken, Michelle Obama as Postmodern Fascist Ideologue. Very important ideological question. And we'll be back in just a minute here on World Crisis Radio.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Just a couple of more notes about Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, now available at lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com, like Little Lulu, if you can remember that old comic strip. Lulu.com. Get a copy. Get more than one copy. We'll tell you as soon as the availability becomes wider. But right now it's up at lulu.com, so don't wait. Get it now. Get it in the mail to you as soon as you can, and get more than one copy because you want to give this to opinion leaders. If you want to do something to stop a fascist seizure of power in the United States, which is a matter of some importance, this is the best tool in your hands, and I urge you to get both of them. It's basically a 1-2 punch. Obama, the Postmodern Coup at Amazon.com. Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography at Lulu.com. Going through this table of contents again very briefly, the Hope Pope and his trilateral machine, Our Souls Are Broken, Michelle Obama as Postmodern Fascist Ideologue. Chapter 9, Obama's Triumph of the Will, the 2008 primaries. Chapter 10, what would be the foreign policy of an Obama presidency? The Brzezinski plan for the separation, the splitting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, driving a wedge between China and Russia, isolating China, cutting off their sources of oil and minerals. You can see this working in Zimbabwe this past week. The power-sharing agreement, the first step towards attempting to drive the Chinese out with the help of local pro-democracy puppets run by left CIA, Project Democracy, and so forth. The Brzezinski Soros soft power group at work there. And then, of course, the axis of confrontation shifting against Russia. Now, I've been talking about that for 8 months, and then it happened in the first week of August that the main confrontation you have to fear is not in the Persian Gulf, but along the borders of Russia, and we've gone through that in previous weeks. Final chapter, chapter 11, Obama as social fascist. Obama as, if you will, left-wing fascist, postmodern fascist, neo-fascist. We go through about a dozen points of the fascist minimum. In other words, those characteristics which are necessary to support the definition of a political movement as fascist, or again, neo-fascist, or some form of hyphenated fascism, if you like. Obama comes very close to filling the bill on all of them, much too close for comfort. And let me stress again the interesting little subhead, fascism as hatred of women. Given the Obama campaign's systematic vilification of Senator Clinton, Chelsea Clinton, Geraldine Ferraro, and many others as women, it is interesting and significant to find that contempt for women was a common characteristic of fascist movements. And I'm citing here from Stanley Payne's History of Fascism, 1919 to 1945. The scholar Stanley Payne writes, another fundamental characteristic of these fascist movements was extreme insistence on what is now termed male chauvinism and the tendency to exaggerate the masculine principle in almost every aspect of activity. This aspect of fascism has been termed radical misogyny or flight from the feminine, manifesting itself in a pathological fear of being engulfed by anything in external reality associated with softness, dissolution, or the uncontrollable. No other kind of political movement expressed such complete horror at the slightest suggestion of androgyny. So that, I guess, is the historical judgment. You see Obama and company doing these things. They don't know it, but they do it. They're not aware that they're recapitulating, let's say, Mussolini of Piazza San Sepolcro in Milan in 1919, but they're doing it nevertheless. So the entire study then ends up on a comparison of Obama in the U.S.-British imperial annals compared to Septimius Severus and his dynasty, including Heliogabalus, a teenage monster. If you think that the influx of youth into politics is automatically a good thing, you need to read the story of Heliogabalus, the teenage emperor and monster. Well, he certainly competes with Caligula and Nero and probably beats them as the most depraved monster ever to be Roman emperor, for at least for any length of time. And then, of course, Caracalla. And then after Septimius Severus, who tried to stabilize the empire by increasing the military and setting hyperinflation into motion, we get then the collapse from about, 230 to 280, 235 to 284 A.D., the first breakdown, the first collapse of the Roman Empire. In other words, the collapse of the Roman Empire as it had existed up to then, with permanent damage that is never made good. And then finally, the conclusion of the book, do you want a weatherman in the White House? do you want somebody whose affinities in life, in other words, his choice of a spouse, but in particular, the choice of his closest friends, Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, turn out to be weathermen, terrorists, bombers, and butchers. And I'm telling you this about these people because I have fought them in the 1960s, and I'm happy to be fighting them still today. Ayers and Dorn were wreckers. Their task assigned to them by their case officers and controllers was to destroy SDS, destroy the student movement, destroy the peace movement, and they succeeded. They did a great job. And even Mark Rudd, part of their clique, but not as close to the center of things as Ayers and Dorn. Mark Rudd goes on at some length, and that's all in the book, Barack H. Obama, The Postmodern Coup. He says, we of the Weathermen were doing the work of the FBI, and we didn't know it. And he says, well, we weren't agents of the FBI. Yeah, Mark, maybe not of the FBI, but how about the foundations? Wasn't the Weatherman Group, there are reports from the time, which I refer to, that were covered, basically that the origin of the Weathermen, the midwives of the Weathermen were foundations and the Office of Economic Opportunity. And remember, the last meeting of the Weathermen was this Flint, Michigan War Council with Ted Gold. It was Ted Gold was a guy from the Mad Dog faction, a very extreme group even for the Weathermen. He was about to blow himself up with the help of Ward Churchill. Ward Churchill was teaching these people how to build bombs. They went to a Greenwich Village brownstone and blew themselves up in early 1970. So Ted Gold, who at the time had just a few months to live, he was going to be blown up with Diana Oughton, O-U-G-H-T-O-N, who was Bill Ayers' girlfriend at that time. Gold says, you know what's going to happen? The Weatherman program is that we want to have an agency of the people of the world set up to run the U.S. economy after the defeat of U.S. imperialism. You can imagine what that would be. Soros, Rockefeller, Goldman Sachs. And there were people even at this Weatherman conference who said, you know, that's really crazy, isn't it, Ted? And that sounds like fascism. And Gold says, well, if it takes fascism, we'll have to have fascism. So that's almost 40 years ago. And isn't it going to be a great irony if 40 years after the collapse of the Weathermen, after they went underground having done their dirty work, that we get a Weatherman sympathizer in the White House, a monstrous, unbelievable perspective, somebody who shares the hatred of the U.S. population in general, because that's what it comes down to, but especially blue-collar workers, the white working class, white workers, whatever you want to call it, working people, especially white. Is that what you want for a president? If you want to stop that, and that's a big change, that's not comparable to anything else in the field. Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, at lulu.com, and we'll get to some news now in a minute. Webster Tropley in Washington, D.C., Obama the Postmodern Coup at Amazon.com, Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, now shipping from Lulu.com, not Luo. You can read about the Luo ethnic group or tribe in there, but it's Lulu, L-U-L-U, L-U-L-U.com, Lulu.com. Please order several copies, a bulk order today if you want to do something serious. And this is an election in which even a modest initiative of these two books in terms of public education can make a big difference. Right now, the poll of polls shows McCain leading Obama 2.8%. The most recent overnight tracking polls show McCain leading Obama by 3 to 4% between the Rasmussen and the Gallup overnight tracking polls. And if you look at the critical states, in Michigan, Obama is up by 2. If you look at Ohio, McCain is up by 2. Look at Pennsylvania, Obama up by 2. McCain up by 3 in Virginia. Colorado, Obama up by 2. New Mexico, Obama up by 2. In Georgia, it looks like Obama is out of it. Georgia is drifting away, and Virginia is still, I believe, in the it's McCain by about 3. So an extremely close vote. The Real Clear Politics Electoral College count, Obama 217, McCain 216, and the rest are up for grabs, too close to call. Once again, in the choice between a conservative and a neo-fascist, you take the conservative. Even in the choice between a reactionary and a neo-fascist, the neo-fascist is by far the greatest evil. And that is the thing that a lot of people still need to understand. A lot of people in Italy in 1922 hadn't quite figured that one out, with some justification, because fascism at that time was a new thing. But in Germany in 1933, there were still people, even though they had seen all that stuff in Italy, and indeed that became one of their problems, that they thought they understood it, and they didn't. The 1933 experience, again, there is no comparison between just another bourgeois political regime, even though it's bellicose, even though it's reactionary, even though it's oppressive. It can be all those things. No comparison between that and the leap into a fascist corporate state. And believe me, if you get Obama with a Democratic Congress, you will feel the full fury of the fascist corporate state, and you will rue the day. You will be flayed alive. You will be left with nothing but your eyes to cry with. So head it off. Obama the Postmodern Coup at Amazon and Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography at Lulu.com. So we have the we'll come back and talk about the campaigns in a minute. But importantly, there is up at rants.com and many other places. It's also up at actindependent.org. Thierry Maison called me this week from Moscow, and he said he had just finished taping a very, very interesting roundtable discussion. This is Thierry Maison. You know him as the founder of the Voltaire Network, the founder of the worldwide 9/11 truth movement, certainly, someone who has taken this argument all around the world, along with Giulietto Chiesa, the leading 9/11 truth activist, of the European Parliament. Giulietto Chiesa is the producer of the documentary film Zero. That has been shown on the first program of Russian television, the big nationwide one with the biggest audience in prime time. That was yesterday evening, the evening of September 11th, in Moscow, was the showing of this documentary film. I'm happy to say that I'm in it in a brief cameo, but at least I'm in it. One of the main people in it is Dario Fo, the Nobel Prize-winning playwright who is the most read and most produced playwright in the world today. If you want to see something more about Chiesa, he's also the editor of the anthology of essays, a book called Zero, which published in Italy and is doing very, very well over there. And I've got a major essay in there about the drills, the 25-plus drills of 9/11. So, and Maison is in the roundtable. Chiesa is in the roundtable. Also, General Leonid Ivashov, who was the commander of Russian armed forces in Moscow on the morning of 9/11, and he's told some of us privately after the fact that he and his staffs saw the skies of America filled with B-52s, in other words, a huge mobilization of thermonuclear strategic potential that morning, which most people simply are not aware of unless you've read my book. If you read these other books about 9/11, that whole part, the whole Russian part, is simply not there. And this was a big, big deal. This was, of course, the Global Guardian exercise of 2001. And since it's been changed in 2005 to Global Storm. But that was the idea of it even then. It was Armageddon. It was thermonuclear war fighting. So Ivashov said even before any plane was hijacked, there was already this huge mobilization of thermonuclear strategic forces, including the submarines and the B-52s, and presumably also the Minuteman and MX nuclear ICBMs, that was all ready to go. And the idea was, of course, that in the Bush-Putin phone call, there was an ultimatum delivered to Russia, which is, we're going to take Afghanistan. Suppose after the Beslan school massacre, the Russians had called the U.S. and said, guess what, we're going to seize Guatemala, and you better like it or you can lump it. Similar. Putin, thank heaven, was flexible enough to realize that it was better to have a certain amount of give in the strategy, and that the neocons, if you gave them enough rope, would hang themselves, which they've done in the meantime. So this is a very interesting discussion. It's got Meissen of France, Ivashov of Russia, Chiesa of Italy, and the European Parliament, and then about 10 Russian experts. One of them is a cosmonaut, I'm told, who says that he was in the International Space Station on the day of 9/11 in the morning and saw the plume of smoke stretching out over the Atlantic, and he says he took a million photographs and films. These were transmitted directly to Houston, but also to Moscow. And I think in Moscow they've been avidly studying them ever since, and that's what he broadly hinted. The Russian cosmonaut, astronaut, says in the course of this roundtable discussion, we've been studying these things carefully, and we have found some very, very interesting things. Hint, hint, hint. In other words, that the U.S. official version is, of course, a farce, as the world has known since, well, very early on. The official U.S. version is an absurd myth that no intelligent person could entertain for 5 seconds. It's no good to have, especially now, unanswered questions. Too late for that. You better have some answers, not unanswered questions. And, of course, the lie-hop theory, the let it happen on purpose, is absolute nonsense. It's just beneath contempt at this point. The only thing is the inside job theory, of course, but inside job can mean many things. Made it happen on purpose. The actions of the rogue network, the patsies, the moles, and the technicians making it happen. And again, my most recent finding, as of about a year ago, I was up to 25 plus drills covering every aspect of 9/11, every main feature, every meme of the myth, every main observed empirical feature of the day of 9/11 is somehow covered by a drill, a federal drill, a New York State drill, a New York City drill, Pennsylvania drills, all kinds of drills, either going on that morning of 9/11 or recently completed during the months of 2001 or in the advanced stages of planning. Now, if you want to see some of this stuff, here's what I recommend you do. Go to Russia Today, the Russia Today website. This is, for those who don't know, Russia Today is a fundamental means of keeping up with the world, and I recommend that people follow Russia Today. You should have been following Russia Today all through this Georgia-Ossetia crisis. Go to Russia Today, RT. And there are some interviews with Chiesa that are up there right now. And I think there may be more of it when this roundtable becomes available. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C., and we're going to get back to our rundown of world news, including the very interesting visit of Giulietto Chiesa and Thierry Meissen to Moscow and indeed to Sochi, because if you go to Russia Today, you will see that in these conversations held by Putin and Medvedev with leading foreign journalists, Chiesa, Giulietto Chiesa in particular, is visible sitting right there next to Putin in the discussions, and we'll also try to sum up some of the things that Putin had to say in this conversation in Sochi, basically, on the Black Sea, not far from Georgia. But now, an institution that we're going to have all the way through the campaign, we'd like now to go to Philadelphia and bring on Philip J. Berg, Esquire. Phil Berg, of course, distinguished 9/11 truth activist, who has been able to keep up with the current strategic situation in a completely exemplary way. He is a former candidate for governor and U.S. senator in the Democratic primaries in Pennsylvania, former Democratic state committeeman for Pennsylvania, former Democratic county chairman for Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, and right now he's promoting that absolutely critical lawsuit against Obama on the question of, is he qualified? Is he a natural-born U.S. citizen? So let me bring on Phil Berg. Phil, welcome.
Welcome. How are you?
Okay, I'm wonderful, and we're all interested in any update that you have for us or any points that you'd like to re-stress this week.
Well, this is for your listeners, the update on my lawsuit against Barack Obama and the Democrat National Committee on the fact that Barack Obama should be removed from the ballot because he does not meet the qualifications to be a candidate for president based upon our United States Constitution, which, as far as I'm concerned, is the most sacred document we have here in our country. My website is obamacrimes.com. It has exploded to an nth degree. I'm really amazed at the response, but I think it indicates how interested people are in making sure that our Constitution is followed. As of Thursday of this week, we had 11.7 million hits on our website in under 3 weeks.
Viral. It's a viral website, and the world is beating a path to your door. That's just tremendous, and congratulations to you, Phil. So that's ObamaCrimes.com, ObamaCrimes.com. Is there anything to report in terms of progress of the suit?
Sure. Where we are now is this past week I have filed with the federal court a motion for expedited discovery, including taking the depositions of Barack Obama and DNC Chair Howard Dean. As of this point, the service has been made of these documents upon the defendants. Once we did official service by process server, until counsel appears, we can just serve by United States mail, which we have done, and I have receipts that they have been so delivered. The next step now is waiting for the judge to decide to have a conference call to make a ruling on it, to have a hearing, you know, whatever the next step is. As of yesterday, on Friday, we had not heard anything, so we're waiting to hear on that. But we told the court in our memo that we need the expedited discovery based on the fact that we are headed towards a constitutional crisis in this country. So we're hoping for, you know, a positive response. As of this time, we haven't had any.
And in terms of the propaganda effects, in terms of exposing Obama, you have already done yeoman service with practically 12 million people now informed. I would just like to add the summary, and I hope this is okay, Phil, the summary of your case, which appears at Obama Crimes, is now included in Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, as the first item in the appendix. Has the Obama campaign responded in any way that you know of?
Not that I know of. Someone mentioned that it was on something out there. Let me shut this down. Someplace out there, it was mentioned on some site. A spokesperson from Obama, you know, said that you know, he was born in Hawaii, but nothing formally in the case, and I'm not even sure, you know, where that particular comment came from. I would think by now that if I was incorrect, which I believe I'm not, I believe I'm now by talking to other people, and I'm waiting to, we're doing further things which I can't discuss right now, but I'm 100% convinced that I am right on this, that Barack Obama was born in Mombasa, Kenya, and he does not meet the, in any way, shape, or form, the constitutional requirements to be a candidate for President of the United States. And I think that he owes a big explanation to the entire country, to all the Democrats and independents that voted for him, even Republicans who were able to switch parties and voted for him in the primary. And that's over 18 million people. And I think he owes a bigger explanation to the people that raised over $200 million for him in the primaries. And those, when I prove my case, that will become, those funds would have to be either refunded or count as income towards the senator. And if I am correct on this, which I told you I'm only 100% sure I am, I don't even believe he meets the requirements to be a United States senator. I mean, there's a possibility there if he was naturalized, but it appears now he might even just hold the citizenship from Indonesia and not the United States at all. And if it is, then he could not be a United States senator. So there's a lot to be looked at after, but the crucial point now is to make sure our United States Constitution is followed and enforced, and I think that's why we're getting the overwhelming response we are.
Okay, and there's, as always, basically two questions. Any sign of copycats among the Republicans in particular in the individual states going to the Secretary of State and saying, here, this guy doesn't qualify, get him off the ballot?
I've received phone calls from people that honestly want to do it, actually on our side wanting to do it. I haven't had a chance to really look to see what's proper on that. But I know there's a lot of interest by a lot of people throughout this country to do it. I'm hoping that the, you know, we get a decision here in the federal court, which then would have an effect and have, you know, not have to have everyone do, you know, go to the various Secretary of State in the various 50 states. And remember, we only have 50 states, even though Senator Obama thinks we're it. I remember he went to Oregon. He said, I'm now in my 57th state, and they wouldn't let me go to Alaska or Hawaii. So he believes there's 59 states in the union, and I'm going to have to correct him one of these days that there's only 50 states.
Well, he never took that course, right, that you have to take to become a citizen. I guess he didn't even take that route. So that's number one, and I think that's one thing we can expect, especially when you get a precedent on this. The other question, of course, is what can people do? People who want to keep the momentum going, keep calling attention to this extremely critical lawsuit and keep the Obama people on the defensive, which is where they belong.
Well, and actually we're doing some research, and we might, hopefully we'll file a, and you can be the first to know on this one, a memorandum on Monday. We're going to file a memorandum to the court that now that we've put these issues to the court, the really burden now shifts to Barack Obama to prove that he's a United States citizen. The reason I think he hasn't done it now, because I don't think he can, because this would be very simple for him or a spokesperson to come out and say, listen, some attorney out there filed some lawsuit, and he's got 24 hours to take it down, or I'm going to sue him for millions of dollars for defamation. And here's evidence, here's my birth certificate to show where I was born. He can't do it because he wasn't born here. I mean, we were really, the sources we've received from various different sources, which I'll disclose at a later time, 100% sure that he was born in Mombasa, Kenya, and his mother, you know, and somebody said to me yesterday, an attorney, well, Phil, you're just dealing with technicalities here. I said, well, it's not a technicality to enforce the Constitution and the laws they're under.
No, I guess not. The Constitution is more than technicality. Phil, hang on. We'll just come back and get a few more things from you in the next segment, and then we'll let you go. We'll be back in a minute on World Crisis Radio.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Here in Washington, D.C., talking to Philip J. Berg, Esquire, our dear friend Phil Berg, lawyer in Philadelphia, and the courageous attorney who has put in this suit, civil suit, in the federal court in Philadelphia, challenging Obama, the Obama campaign, the Democratic National Committee, and the Federal Elections Committee Commission to prove that citizenship and natural born status apply to Obama, because otherwise he can't be president and he can't run for President Phil. I guess you've been keeping up a pretty good media barrage. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, I've been on radio station after radio station, and all across the United States, all across Canada. The major stations aren't covering this yet. I don't know why. This has, aside from the hits on my website, there's just an explosion if you go on the internet and put in anything. Put in Obama Berg, you'll get, I think on Yahoo, you get like 14 million different places to look. And it's all over the internet. Everyone has to know about this thing. And really, it's unbelievable that the major media, you know, will not cover this. We're hoping a ruling from the court to let us move forward on expedited discovery. We'll do whatever the court suggests at that point. But I've been on, and I will appear on any radio, any TV show. I will talk to anybody, any magazine or newspaper. I will, you know, I can answer any question because I know we're right on this. And the silence by the Obama people indicates that we're right, because if not, they would have been out there doing something. So if all your listeners can keep looking at ObamaCrimes.com, spread the word, spread our website, and if they can, send a few bucks, because now with the overwhelming response, I have to put some more people on. They're volunteers, but at least I'm covering some expenses for them, and we could use some bucks. And I really appreciate being on your show and that you taking a very keen interest in it.
Let me just say, in terms of anecdotal evidence, I talked to a person a couple of days ago in a sort of a casual conversation, this person coming into town from Arkansas. And the person said, hey, you know, there's this lawyer who's suing Obama claiming he's not a citizen. So I think the truth is getting out. And again, people should do the calculation. 12 million hits. That is a big public relations problem. And that's just that one website. The references to that pop up are, as Phil says, undoubtedly in the many, many millions. That's a huge problem for the Obama campaign. Why, if they have the proof to refute this stuff and shut it down, why don't they come forward? Nothing more eloquent than that silence. Now, I know Phil is always shy about the necessity of supporting this, but if you go to ObamaCrimes.com, there is a means there to make a contribution, I believe, with PayPal or credit card, and that is what people should do. Give a substantial financial contribution to let this go forward. There are questions here of serving documents, travel in order to do research, sometimes to places very far away, because you're talking about somebody whose life goes from Kenya to Hawaii to Indonesia. That covers just about most of the globe. So people need to support this. And, of course, Phil, you know, our listeners on this show are activists, and they do a lot of work in terms of take back the airwaves. We've been doing that traditionally here for a couple of years. And take back the airwaves means you go to ObamaCrimes.com, you get the latest update on what the suit is doing, and then you call in to Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, Ed Schultz, Air America, or the local stations, especially in those critical states like Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Colorado, Nevada, Florida, and so on down the line, and get the word out. So a final word from you, Phil.
Well, I just was emailed something here, and I have to confirm it, but one of the a caller said to me that they had a photo from the hospital in Mombasa, Kenya, and they just sent it to me. I have to verify it, but they're showing a plaque on the wall at the hospital, and it says Mombasa, Kenya Hospital, Barack Obama, born here on August 4, 1961, and it's posted on the pillar. Now, I'm going to have to verify that that's correct, and someone just didn't make it up and superimpose it. But if that really exists, and I think our major media who have sources, the Associated Press probably have sources there, they should go over and see if that plaque is on that building. If it is, you know, I think it's just more evidence that we're correct. And I know from information I received that he was born over there in Mombasa, Kenya. So if that plaque's on that hospital and his grandmother is running around in Kenya saying, I'm so happy my grandson could be president of the United States and he was born here, you know, I think it's incumbent upon the major media already to say, hey, you know what, this could be right, and we should discuss it further. But I appreciate Webster being on your show and your listeners and all the support you give me, and I thank you very much for that.
Okay, thank you, Phil Berg, and we hope to get you back next week and every week up through November 4th.
Absolutely.
We'll see you then.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And, of course, tell us as soon as anything happens, and we'll give you more time.
I sure
okay?
will. Yep.
See you soon, then. Thank you, Phil Berg. Philip J. Berg, Esquire of Philadelphia, distinguished lawyer, 9/11 truth activist, a man for all seasons, someone who was on the leading edge of 9/11 truth, and he's now on the edge of the leading edge of the anti-Obama agitation, which is the current equivalent of that. In other words, trying to fight back the main covert operation of your time is always the big question. Maybe 30 of those 30 dirt diggers that the mainstream corporate media whores have sent to Alaska, they're trying to Watergate Palin. Imagine if they take at least 10 of them and send 5 of them to Kenya and 5 of them to Indonesia. And I think we're going to find out that Obama cannot be president because he just doesn't fill the bill. Thank you to Phil Berg. Now, remember, the website there is obamacrimes.com, obamacrimes.com. Let's go back to Russia now. I do urge people, go to this Russia Today website. It's www.russiatoday.com. And look up Giulietta Chiesa, C-H-I-E-S-A, and you will find some interviews that Giulietta has given. And take a look at Russia Today, the broadcast version, because they are playing, as of yesterday, they were playing short excerpts from a longer interview that Chiesa, C-H-I-E-S-A, had given. And it's very interesting. He naturally says the big thing with 9/11 is the absolute absence of air defense, which is simply impossible, indicating inside job. Go ahead with that. And then you also see, if you pay attention to this Russia Today, which is available as cable news in many, many places, you can on a cable from your cable provider. You can also see this discussion with Chiesa and Putin in the Valve group in Sochi in the Black Sea. We'll be back in just a minute.
Are you tired of searching for Great Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C. When you go to that Russia Today website, they have an interesting poll. Do you believe the report of the Official Commission on 9/11? Their choices are yes, they did a great job collecting evidence. No, they are deliberately hiding the truth. And the no to the 9/11 fakery and cover-up is winning by 85-15, but if the listeners of this program get in there, maybe we can bring that closer to increase the negatives on that idiotic Kane Hamilton Commission report. Now, in terms of the strategic situation, we continue to follow the Ukrainian split. And this, of course, is the NATO puppet Yushchenko, the IMF, NATO, U.S.-British asset Yushchenko, the president of the country, now being actively opposed by the courageous and charming Yulia Tymoshenko, used to be known as the gas princess, but we've now promoted her out of that league based on human qualities that she's shown. It's a little bit like Senator Clinton, right? You do good things and you reap the good benefits, the redemption question, always very important. So Yulia Tymoshenko is in the course of redeeming herself to some extent based on her opposition to reducing Ukraine to a puppet state of the U.S., the British, NATO, and the infamous International Monetary Fund. Now, there's also some other interesting stuff going on. The responses of Russia to the Georgia attack are going on, and that reaches all the way to Venezuela. We've now got Russian bombers that have arrived in Venezuela, and the Russians are sending a fleet led by a nuclear-powered cruiser, the Peter the Great, along with a couple of hundred troops to Venezuela to take part in maneuvers. So you see the aggressive game of the Russophobes and Cold War lunatics in Washington, led by Brzezinski, needless to say, has now been generating some counter moves. You're no longer dealing with helpless countries like Iraq that cannot even defend their own national territory. You're picking a fight with a superpower, and God, this is not a good way to go. So now we've got Russian bombers in Venezuela. We've got the arrival of a Russian fleet coming soon. The U.S. ambassador to Venezuela has been PNG'd. He is persona non grata, out. Fuera, the U.S. ambassador to Venezuela. And there's also talk about reviving some Cold War listening posts that the Russian Soviets had developed at that time in Cuba. The Russian defense minister is going to go to India. I take it this is a bid in extremis. India is a candidate to become a pawn and cannon fodder of the Anglo-Americans on the Eurasian landmass, the vehicle for reducing India to the status of cannon fodder and dupe and kamikaze pawn is the U.S.-India nuclear agreement, right? And it's essentially the aristocracy of that country, let us say, who are interested in this kind of stuff, the oligarchs who will collect and earn and loot big time out of that. The average Indian is absolutely opposed to this. This is a monstrous fate for this old and extremely important civilization, India, which at various times in human history has been the leading one. Well, you won't be the leading one if you make yourself into a pawn of the Anglo-Americans. So we've also got Medvedev. You see, there's this interesting Devalve discussions going on with Putin, Medvedev, and a group of international journalists, people from the London Times, the London Financial Times, Giulietto Chiesa, former correspondent of La Stampa, the Fiat newspaper of Turin, also of Unità, the Italian Communist Party paper. They're all there in these discussions, and Putin in particular says, you know, you attack us like that, you send in your Georgian puppet troops with weapons from 14 or 15 countries, trained by U.S. Special Forces, with U.S. Special Forces advisors, I would add, and you kill 65 Russian troops and you kill 2,000 Russian citizens of South Ossetia. What did you expect us to do? Turn the other cheek? And did you expect us to go back to the border and sit there under continuous artillery bombardment from Georgian batteries and rocket launchers just on the other side of the border? No. What we had to do was go out and destroy the military infrastructure used in the attack and render Georgia, as far as possible, innocuous and incapable of launching another genocidal, aggressive attack. Medvedev, at that same exchange in Valve, says, you talk about 9/11, this Georgian attack on South Ossetia was our 9/11, and indeed, it's comparable, 2,000 dead, 65 Russian troops, and the rest of them are Russian citizens of different kinds. It is quite comparable in terms of the magnitude. But, of course, 9/11, the U.S. demands that the world stop immediately in the case of these 2,000 Russian citizens getting killed. Well, that doesn't matter. Don't even go beyond the border. Don't even make an incursion into Georgia to destroy the artillery and rocket launchers that were used to do those killings. That's the position of NATO and company. So now we come to this great dividing point. If you're going to be human in the United States in the coming months, you better be pro-Russian. You better be aware that the Russian actions of August are simply self-defense, guaranteed to every country under the UN Charter, and of course inherently guaranteed to everybody under natural law, which does not change. Now, unfortunately, Governor Palin has been sequestered with a bunch of unemployed neocons, right? These are neocons who have no power in Washington, D.C., because they've all been kicked out. They're kind of word-mongering, and their kind of bankrupt, idiotic strategic blathering is not even in power in Washington. Brzezinski is calling the shots. The anti-Russian soft power group dominates Washington, D.C. through people like Gates at the Pentagon, a Brzezinski acolyte, and Condoleezza Rice coming from the Corbell School, which is close enough. So we had a bunch of unemployed neocons who've obviously been now brainwashing Governor Palin. Palin has been is in the course of being brainwashed. So she makes this extremely foolish remark about Georgia and Russia and that Georgia should join NATO. No, Governor Palin, no NATO membership for Georgia, no NATO membership for Ukraine. Kick out those neocons before they brainwash you. That is crazy. We do not tie the United States. The fate of the United States does not depend on the tin pot little Hitler Saakashvili. We don't want any part of that. And we don't want our $1 billion given to line the pockets of Saakashvili as he prepares to abscond to Switzerland or the Bahamas or some other place where he wants to go into exile and live like a nabob. We don't like that. Generally speaking, you got to remember, neocon advice is electoral poison. You cannot win elections based on neocon calculations when things have gone as far as they have. Maybe in 2004 you could do it thanks to vote fraud. But now in 2008, this stuff is a disaster. Now, remember, of course, that Biden and Obama have said exactly the same thing, that Georgia and Ukraine should become NATO members and that the U.S. has to defend them and that they should get $1 billion. So there's no choice at that level. But Palin, don't go down to the level of Obama and Biden just because you've got a gaggle of unemployed neocon adventurers who have been brought in to fill your mind with these idiotic notions. Same thing with Israel. She has to say three times, you can't second guess Israel on their security needs. Well, that's just absurd. American interests have to be paramount, and the Israelis, indeed, have been told by Bush not to do it. They've been warned repeatedly. We'll get to that in the next segment. And similarly, it will not do to talk about all options on the table for Pakistan. Take those options off the table. You can't invade sovereign states and expect to prosper in today's world. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. We want to remind you now in our last segment, you got to get Obama, the Postmodern Coup, the Making of a Manchurian Candidate. You got to get that from Amazon.com. And the big news this week is as of at least September 11th, you can get Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography by yours truly from Lulu.com. Lulu.com. That's Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography, a goldmine, basically a relatively comprehensive compendium of everything you need to know to fight Barky and the proposed postmodern fascist coup here in the United States. We're just going through this unfortunate foreign policy part of the Palin interview. Obviously, we need to let Palin be Palin, not have a bunch of unemployed neocon rejects and failures come in and try to brainwash her. The Georgia-Russia stuff is absurd. The Georgia, the Ukraine-NATO stuff is absurd. The stuff she says about Israel is absurd. The stuff she says about Pakistan is also a provocation. And even on global warming, this is really unfortunate. They've somehow convinced her that she's got to pay some degree of lip service to global warming. She's still hanging tough on Anwar. That's at least something. Nobody, if she wants to have a political future in Alaska, she can't give up on Anwar because nobody can get elected in Alaska that's not interested in economic development and a better life. So if you go against drilling in Anwar, your political career in Alaska is pretty much kaput and finish. So we've also got now this afternoon the Lehman Brothers situation. Lehman Brothers is on the death watch. And as of this morning, and again, this is Friday, the 12th of September, 2008, Secretary Paulson from the Principals Committee, part of the group that actually dominates the U.S. government, says there's probably not going to be a bailout of Lehman Brothers. Let's see how long that holds up, because when Lehman begins to blow and that multi-trillion dollar derivatives book begins to become the ticking time bomb, I think you're going to see something different. Remember, we'll talk about this in future broadcasts. The answer to this stuff is Lehman Brothers should have been seized months ago, and their derivatives book should have been deleted and shredded and wiped out. And at that point, you could then maybe save the prime brokerage and keep that going, or simply wrap the whole thing up in Chapter 11 bankruptcy, turning into Chapter 7. I was on WBAI in New York City yesterday evening with Sally O'Brien. This was the 9/11 anniversary. And you can see from what I've been telling you in the program, 9/11 is now getting a second wind in the following form, though. No longer as 9/11, the war on terror, bin Laden, al-Qaeda, per se, but now as a propaganda conflict within the superpower confrontation between Russia and the United States. In other words, the lunatic Brzezinski policy, the policy that is embraced by people like Joseph Nye and by this guy Basevich, who now has a book out, as well as the Principals Committee, Gates, Rice, and so forth. This group is now running foreign policy, and one of the obvious ways for Russia to fight back is to discredit the U.S. Foreign policy line using 9/11. So this can now make a comeback. But again, this is not your father's 9/11. This is not the 9/11 you knew. This is now 9/11 and the question of U.S. and Russian relations. So what are we left with? Haaretz from Israel says that the U.S. has told the Israelis no, no, no on everything to do with Iran. The Israelis have come demanding an anti-Iranian package, including bunker busters and everything else. The U.S. answer is no. The Israelis ask for air corridors across Iraq. The U.S. says no. The U.S. says no. You can go and ask Maliki. See if the Iranian puppet Maliki is willing to give you a corridor to attack Iran. The Israelis ask for U.S. help in refueling their jets over Iraq, coming and going. No. The article actually notes in Haaretz that that would take 2 years to implement no matter what you did. I think this is off the table for the moment, at least if this article is not completely made up. Haaretz also says the Israelis have gotten one concession from the U.S., which is some kind of a phased array early warning radar put in the Negev so they can see Iranian missiles from over the horizon. That much is being done, and it's being done on a fast track. The Israeli view is that there is zero possibility of a U.S. attack on Iran, and the U.S. is not letting the Israelis do it. Peres, remember, a couple of months ago warned Olmert, don't get involved with Iran. It will lead to a regional war that will go badly for us. Remember that the current evolution against the neocons has significant amount to do with that Israeli attack on Lebanon 2 years ago in the summer. August 2006, Israel and July, Israel attacks Lebanon and gets defeated, one entire armored division destroyed. That, I think, was the death knell for the entire U.S.-British-Israeli method of waging war in the Middle East. And the reason that all these characters are falling back on soft power now is that their characteristic method of aggression is a failure. So it is time to open yourself up to this. The old thinking is bankrupt and it's gone. I don't think there's going to be an attack on Iran, but sure has been an attack on South Ossetia and indeed an attack on Russia. The Brzezinski line, which is borne by Obama, is to mobilize more countries like Georgia. Two or three many Georgias. Iran should be one of them. Ukraine should be one of them. Poland should be one of them. Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia should join in. All these little countries, and even sizable countries close to Russia, sacrificed as kamikaze assets, kamikaze pawns, expendable proxies against Russia. A lot of them can figure this out. A lot of you can see Yulia Tymoshenko has figured it out. Who's going to be the next one to figure it out? Anybody in Poland figuring it out? Some of them, of course, in the Baltics are blinded by their anti-Russian hatred, and they're willing to do just about anything. But Saakashvili is not likely to find too many imitators, I would say. And that's more or less where we're left. So in terms of the U.S. situation, once again, divided government is our only hope. We want gridlock. We don't trust either of these two groups, not Obama, Biden, and not McCain, Palin. We want divided government. Now, given the fact that a Democratic majority in both houses of Congress is, I believe, still a foregone conclusion, although Obama's ineptitude makes anything possible, that leaves you with the only possible route to divided government and the blessings of blessed gridlock, a Republican president and a Democratic Congress, and let them fight. That is the genius of these institutions. So do what you can to bring this about. Stop Obama at all costs. Expose him using Obama the Postmodern Coup from Amazon.com, and now Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography at Lulu.com. Divided government. Remember, McCain, with all of his bluster and all of his intemperate language, will be an aged, decrepit, tired, old, lame duck from the very first day in office. The succession struggles will begin. The media is full of reports that he can't live through even one term, much less two. That will guarantee a weak presidency, given his commitments on this petty bourgeois obsession with clean government and really austerity, because that's what he expects to get through this, that he won't allow pork barrels, he'll veto all the bills. He will find himself locked in combat with an extremely hostile Democratic majority and almost equally locked in combat with a very unhappy Republican minority who are not even going to get the earmarks and other pork barrels that they would normally expect to get from a president of their own party. So gridlock, divided government, act in such a way as to bring about gridlock, and this means stop Obama at all costs. And if you don't have somebody like Kevin Barrett to vote for, if you can vote for Kevin Barrett or Craig Hill, vote for them. But otherwise, look at the Democrat and get the blessings of divided government and gridlock. That's your best possible outcome. We'll be back next week, God willing, here on World Crisis Radio.